Lawrence Block. Here's a chiller about a dangerous woman with a dangerous plan in mind, and the worst of intentions, who maybe should have given the whole matter a little more thought. New York Times bestseller Lawrence Block, one of the kings of the modern mystery genre, is a grand master of Mystery Writers of America, the winner of 4 Edgar Awards and 6 Seamus Awards, and the recipient of the Nero Award, the Philip Marlowe Award, a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Private Eye Writers of America, and a Cartier Diamond Dagger for Life Achievement from the Crime Writers Association. He's written more than 50 books and numerous short stories. Block is perhaps best known for his long-running series about alcoholic ex-cop private investigator Matthew Scudder, protagonist of novels such as The Sins of the Fathers, In the Midst of Death, A Stab in the Dark, and 15 others. But he's also the author of the best-selling 4-book series about the assassin Keller, including Hitman, Hit List, Hit Parade, and Hit and Run. The 8-book series about globe-trotting insomniac Evan Tanner, including The Thief Who Couldn't Sleep and The Cancelled Check. And the 11-book series about burglar and antiquarian book dealer Bernie Rodenbaugh, including Burglars Can't Be Choosers, The Burglar in the Closet, and The Burglar Who Liked to Quote Kipling. He's also written standalone novels such as Small Town, Death Pulls a Double Cross, and 16 others, as well as novels under the names Chip Harrison, Jill Emerson, and Paul Kavanagh. His many short stories have been collected in Sometimes They Bite, Like a Lamb to Slaughter, Some Days You Get the Bear, By the Dawn's Early Light, the collected mystery stories, Death Wish and Other Stories, Enough Rope, and One Night Stands and Lost Weekends. He's also edited 13 mystery anthologies, including Murder on the Run, Blood on Their Hands, Speaking of Wrath, and with Otto Pensler, The Best American Mystery Stories 2001, and produced 7 books of writing advice and nonfiction, including Telling Lies for Fun and Profit. His most recent books are the new Matt Scudder novel, A Drop of the Hard Stuff, the new Bernie Rodenbaugh novel, Like a Thief in the Night, and, writing as Jill Emerson, the novel Getting Off. He lives in New York City.
I Know How to Pick 'Em, by Lawrence Block. Read for you by Jake Weber. I sure know how to pick 'em. Except I don't know as I've got any credit coming for this one, because it's hard to make the case that it was me that picked her. She walked into that edge-of-town roadhouse with a script all worked out in her mind, and all it was left to do was cast the lead. The male lead, that is. Far as the true leading role was concerned, well, that belonged to her. That much went without saying. Woman like her, she'd have to be the star in all of her productions. They had a jukebox, of course. Loud one. Be nice if I recalled what was playing when she crossed the threshold, but I wasn't paying attention to the music or to who came through the door. I had a beer in front of me, surprise, surprise. And I was looking into it like any minute now it would tell me a secret. Yeah, right. All any beer ever said to me was, drink me down, horse. I might make things better, and I sure can't make them worse. It was a country jukebox, which you could have guessed from the parking lot where the pickups outnumbered the Harleys by 4 or 5 to 1. So if I can't say what was playing when she came in, or even when I looked up from my PBR and got a look at her, I can tell you what wasn't playing. I only have eyes for you. That wasn't coming out of that jukebox, but it should have been. She was the beauty. Her face was all high cheekbones and sharp angles, and a girl who was just plain pretty would get all washed out standing next to her. She wasn't pretty herself, and a quick first glance might lead you to think that she wasn't attractive at all. But you'd look again, and that first thought would get so far lost you'd forget you ever had it. There are fashion models with that kind of face. Film actresses, too, and they're the ones that keep on getting the good parts in their 40s and 50s, when the pretty girls start looking like soccer moms and nosy neighbors. And she only had eyes for me. Large, well-spaced eyes, a rich brown in color. And I swear I felt the mommy before I was otherwise aware of her presence. Looked up, caught her looking at me, and she saw me looking and didn't look away. I suppose I was lost right there. She was a blonde, with her hair cut to frame and flatter her face. She was tall, say 5'10", 5'11", slender but curvy. Her blouse was silk, with a bold geometric print. It was buttoned too high to show a lot of cleavage, but when she moved, it would cling to her and let you know what it wasn't showing. The way her jeans fit, well, you all at once understood why people paid big money for designer jeans. The joint wasn't crowded, it was early, but there were people between her and me. She flowed through them and they melted away. The bartender, a hard-faced old girl with snake tattoos, came over to take a drink order. The blonde had to think it over. "I don't know," she said to me. "What should I have?" "Whatever you want." She put her hand on my arm. I was wearing a long-sleeved shirt, so her skin and mine never touched, but they might as well. "Pick a drink for me," she said. I was looking down at her hand resting there on my forearm. Her fingernails were medium long, their polish the bright color of arterial bleeding. Pick a drink for her? The ones that came quickest to mind were too fancy for the surroundings. Be insulting to order her a shot and a beer. Had to be a cocktail, but one that the snake lady would know how to make. I said, "Lady'll have a Cuervo margarita." Her hand was on my right arm, so rather than move it, I used my left hand to poke the change I'd left on the bar top, indicating that the margarita was on me. "And the same for you or another blue ribbon?" I shook my head. "But you could give me a Joey C twice to keep it company." "Thank you," my blonde said while the bartender went to work. "That's a perfect choice, a margarita." The drinks came, hers in a glass with a salted rim, my double Cuervo in an oversized shot glass. She let go of my arm and picked up her drink, raised the glass in a wordless toast. I left my Cuervo where it was and returned the toast with my beer. She didn't throw her drink back like a sailor, but she didn't take a little baby bird sip either. She drank some and put the glass on the bar and her hand on my arm. "Nice. No wedding ring." I'd noticed that right away, and hadn't needed a second glance to see that there'd been a ring on that finger, that it had come off recently enough to show not only the untanned band where the ring had been, but the depression it had caused in the flesh. It said a lot, that finger, that she was married, and that she'd deliberately taken off her ring before entering the bar. "Hey, didn't I say? I know how to pick 'em." But didn't I also say she picked me? And picked that low-down roadhouse for the same reason. If my type was what she was looking for, that was the place to find it. My type? Well, big. Built like a middle linebacker, or maybe a tight end. 6'5", 230, big in the shoulders, narrow in the waist. More muscles than a man needs unless he's planning to lift a car out of a rut. Which I don't make a habit of. Not that good at lifting my poor self out of a rut, let alone an automobile. Clean-shaven when I shave. I was a day away from a razor when she came in and put her hand on my arm. But no beard, no mustache. Hair's dark and straight, and I haven't lost any of it yet. But I haven't hit 40 yet either, so who's to say I'll get to keep it? My type, big outdoorsy galoot, more brawn than brains, more street smarts than book smarts. Someone who probably won't notice you were wearing a wedding ring until a few minutes ago. Or if he does, won't likely care. Like to dance, little lady? I'd spotted him earlier out of the corner of my eye, a cowboy type, my height, an inch or two more, but packing less weight. Long and lean, built to play wide receiver to my tight end. And no, I never played football myself. Only watch it when a TV's showing it in a room I'm in. I never cared about sports, even as a boy. Had the size, had the quickness, and I got tired of hearing I should go out for this team or go out for that one. It was a game. Why waste my time on a game? And here was this wide receiver hitting on a woman who declared herself to be mine. She tightened her grip on my arm, and I guess she was liking the way this was shaping up. Two studs taking it to the lot out back, squaring off, then doing their best to kill each other. And she'd stand there watching, the blood singing in her veins, until it was settled, and she went home with the winner. No question, he was ready to play. He'd sized me up half an hour ago before she was in the picture. There's the type of guy who'll do that. Check out a room, work out who he might wind up fighting and how he'd handle it. Could be I'd done some of that myself, getting the measure of him, guessing what moves he'd make, guessing what would work against him. Or I could walk away from it, turn my back on both of them, head out of the bar, take my act on down the road. Not that hard to find a place that'd sell you a shot of Cuervo and a beer to back it up. Except, you know, I never do walk away from things. Just knowing I could don't mean I can. Oh, that's very kind of you, she said. But we were just leaving. Perhaps another time. Getting to her feet as she said it, using just the right tone of voice so as to leave no doubt that she meant it. Not cold, not putting him down, but nowhere near warm enough to encourage the son of a bitch. Handle it just right, really. I left my beer where it was, left my change there to keep it company. She took hold of my arm on the way out. There were some eyes on us as we left, but I guess we were both used to that. When we hit the parking lot, I was still planning the fight. It wasn't going to happen, but my mind was working it out just the same. Funny how you'll do that. You want to win that kind of fight. What you want to do is get the first punch in, before he sees it coming. First you bomb Pearl Harbor, then you declare war. Let him think you're backing out of it, even. Hey, I don't want to fight you. And when he's afraid you're going to chicken out, you give him your best shot. Time it right. Taken by surprise. One punch is all you need. Wouldn't have done that with old Lash LaRue, though. Oh, not because it wouldn't have done the job. Would have worked just fine. Put him face down on the gravel. Wranglers and snap-fastened dude shirt and silly pompadour and all. But that'd cheat her out of the fight she was hoping to see. So what I'd have done, once we were outside and good to go, was spread my hands in a can't we work this out gesture, leaving it for him to sucker punch me. But I'd be ready, even though I wouldn't look ready, and I'd duck when he swung. They're always headhunters, dudes like him, and I'd be ducking almost before he was swinging, and I'd bury a fist midway between his navel and his nuts. I'd do the whole deal with body shots. Why hurt your hands bouncing him off jawbone? Tall as he was, there was a whole lot of middle to him. And that's where I'd hammer him, and the first shot would take the fight out of him and the starch out of his punches, if he even got to throw a second one. I'd be aiming lefts at his liver. That's on the right, pretty much on the belt line. It's a legal punch in a boxing ring, never mind a parking lot, and if you find the spot, it's a one-punch finisher. I haven't done it or seen it done, but I believe it would be possible to kill a man with a liver shot. But I was running the script for a fight that wasn't going to happen, because my blonde had already written her own script and it turned out there wasn't a fight scene in it. Sort of a pity in a way, because there'd have been a certain satisfaction in taking that cowboy apart, but his liver would live to fight another day. Any damage it sustained would be from the shots and beers he threw at it, not from any fists of mine. And you know, that would have been too easy, if all she was after was getting two roughnecks to duke it out over her. She had something a lot worse in mind. I hope I wasn't out of line, she said, getting us out of there, but I was afraid. She hadn't seemed afraid. That you'd hurt him, she explained. Kill him, even. Her car was a Ford, the model the rental outfits were apt to give you. It was tucked between a pair of pickups, both of them showing dinged fenders and a lot of rust. She pressed a button to unlock the doors, and the headlights winked. I played the gentleman, tagging along at her side, reaching to open the driver's side door for her. She hesitated, turned toward me, and it would have been a hard cue to miss. I took hold of her and kissed her. And yes, it was there, the chemistry, the biology, whatever you want to call it. She kissed back and started to push her hips forward, then stopped herself, then couldn't stop herself. I felt the warmth of her through her jeans and mine, and I thought of doing her right there, just throwing her down and doing her on the gravel with the two pickups screening us from view. Throw her a fast, hard one, pull out and stand up while she's still quivering, and be out of there before she can get her game up and running. Goodbye, little lady, because we just did what we came here to do, so whatever you gotta say, well, why do I have to listen to it? I let go of her. She slipped behind the wheel, and I walked around the car and got in next to her. She started the engine but paused before putting the Ford in gear. She said, "My name's Claudia." Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. "Gary," I said. "I don't live around here." "Neither did I. Don't live anywhere, really. Or looking at it from another way, I live everywhere." "My motel is just up the road, maybe half a mile." She waited for me to say something. "What? Are the sheets clean? Do they get HBO? I didn't say anything. "Should we pick up something to drink? Because I don't have anything in the room." I said I was fine. She nodded, waited for a break in the traffic, pulled onto the road. I paid attention to the passing scenery so I'd be able to come back for my car. A quarter mile down the road, she took her right hand off the wheel and put it on my crotch. Her eyes never left the road. Another quarter mile and her hand returned to the wheel. Had to wonder what was the point of that. Making sure I had something for her. Keeping me from forgetting why we were going to the motel. Maybe just trying to show me she was every inch a lady. I suppose I just keep on getting what I keep on looking for. Because, face it, you don't go prospecting for Susie Homemaker in a low-down joint with a lot full of pickups and hogs. Walk into a room where you hear Kitty Wells singing how it wasn't God who made honky-tonk angels. Well, what are you going to find but a honky-tonk angel yourself? You want a one-man woman. You want someone who'll keep house and buy into the whole white picket fence trip. There's other places you can go hunting. And I wasn't showing up at Methodist socials or meetings of parents without partners or taking poetry workshops at a continuing education program. I was, another song, looking for love in all the wrong places. So why blame fate for sending me a woman like Claudia? Or whatever her name was. The motel was a one-story non-chain number, presentable enough, but not where a woman like her would stay if all she wanted was a place to sleep. She'd pick a Ramada or a Hampton Inn, but what we had here was your basic no-tell motel, clean enough and reasonably well-maintained, and set back from the road for privacy. Her unit was around the back where the little Ford couldn't be seen from the road. If it wasn't a rental, if it was her own car, well, no one driving by could spot the plate. Like it mattered. Inside, with the door shut and the lock set, she turned to me and for the first time looked the least bit uncertain. Like she was trying to think what to say or waiting for me to say something. Well, the hell with that. She'd already groped my crotch in the car, and that ought to be enough to break the ice. I reached for her and kissed her, and I got one hand on her ass and drew her in close. I could have peeled those jeans off of her, could have ripped that fine silk blouse. I had the impulse. More, I wanted to do some damage. Soften her up with a fist in her belly. See what a liver shot would do to her. Fact. I have thoughts like that. They'll come to me, and when they do, I always get a quick flash of my mother's face. Just the quickest flash. Like the flash of green you'll sometimes get when you watch the sun go down over water. It's gone almost before it registers, and afterward you can't quite swear that you really saw it. Like that. I was gentle with her. Well, gentle enough. She didn't pick me out of the crowd because she wanted tender words and butterfly kisses. I gave her what I sensed she wanted, but I didn't take her any further than she wanted to go. It wasn't hard to find her rhythm. Wasn't hard to build her up and hold her back and then let it all happen for her, staying with her all the way, coaxing the last little quiver out of the sweet machinery of her body. Nothing to it, really. I'd been taught young. I knew what to do and how to do it. I knew it would be good. I was lying there, eyes closed. I don't know what I'd been thinking about. Sometimes my mind just wanders, goes off by itself somewhere and thinks its own thoughts. And then a car backfires or something changes the energy in the room and I'm back where I was, and whatever I was thinking about is gone without a trace. Must be like that for everybody, I suppose. Can't be that I'm special, me and my private thoughts. This time it was her voice, bringing the present back as sure as a thunderclap. I rolled over and saw she was half sitting in the bed beside me. She'd taken the pillow from under her ass and had it supporting her head and shoulders. She had the air of a woman smoking a cigarette, but she wasn't a smoker and there weren't any cigarettes around. But it was like that, the cigarette afterward, whether or not there was a cigarette in the picture. All I wanted, she said, was to come in here and close a door and shut the world out and then make everything in the world go away. Did it work? Like magic, she said. You didn't come. No. Was there something? Sometimes I hold back. Oh. It makes the second time better, more intense. I can see how it would. But doesn't it take remarkable control? I hadn't been trying to hold back. I'd been trying to throw her a fuck she wouldn't quickly forget, that's all. But I didn't need to tell her all that. We'll be able to have a second time, won't we? You don't have to leave.
I'll be here all night, she said. We can even have breakfast in the morning if you'd like.
I thought you might have to get home to your husband. Her hands moved and the fingers on her right hand fastened on the base of her ring finger, assuring themselves there was no ring there. Not the ring, I said. The mark of the ring. A depression in the skin because you must have taken it off just before you came into the roadhouse. And the thin white line showing where the sun don't shine.
Sherlock Holmes, she said.
She paused so that I could say something, but why help her out? I waited and she said,
You're not married?
No.
Have you ever been?
Same answer. She held her hand up, palm out, as if to examine her ring. I guess she was studying the mark where it had been. She said,
I thought I'd get married right after high school. Where I grew up, if you were pretty, that's what happened. Or if you weren't pretty, but if someone got you pregnant anyway.
You were pretty. She nodded. Why pretend she didn't know it?
But I wasn't pregnant. And this girlfriend got this idea. Let's get out of town. Let's go to Chicago and see what happens. So just like that, I packed a bag and we went. And it took her 3 weeks to get homesick and go right back.
But not you.
No, I liked Chicago. Or thought I did. What I liked was the person I got to be in Chicago. Not because it was Chicago, but because it wasn't home.
So you stayed.
Until I went someplace else, another city. And I had jobs, and I had boyfriends, and I spent some time between boyfriends, and it was all fine. And I thought, well, some women have husbands and children, and some don't, and it looks like I'll be one of the ones who don't.
I let her talk, but didn't listen too closely. She met this man. He wanted to marry her. She thought it was her last chance. She knew it was a mistake. She went ahead and did it anyway. It was her story, but hardly hers alone. I'd heard it often enough before. Sometimes I suppose it was true. Maybe it was true this time, far as that goes. Maybe not. When I got tired of hearing her, I put a hand on her belly and stroked her. Her sudden intake of breath showed she wasn't expecting it. I ran my hand down and her legs parted in anticipation, and I put my hand on her and fingered her. Just that. Just lay beside her and worked her with my fingers. She'd closed her eyes, and I watched her face while my fingers did what they did. Oh, oh, oh. I got hard doing this, but didn't feel the need to do anything about it. After she came, I just lay where I was. I closed my eyes and got soft again and lay there listening to all the silence in the room. My father moved away when I was still in diapers. At least that was what I was told. I don't remember him, and I'm not convinced he was there. Somebody got her pregnant. It wasn't the Holy Ghost. But did he ever know it? Did she even know his last name? So I was raised by a single mother, though I don't recall hearing the term back then. Early on, she brought men home, and then she stopped doing that. She might come home smelling of where she'd been and what she'd been doing, but she'd come home alone. Then she stopped that, too, and spent her evenings in front of the TV. One night we were watching some program, I forget what, and she said, "You're old enough now. I suppose you touch yourself." I knew what she meant. What I didn't know was how to respond. She said, "Don't be ashamed. Everybody does it. It's part of growing up. Let me see it." And when confusion paralyzed me, "Take off your pajama bottoms and show me your dick." I didn't want to. I did want to. I was embarrassed. I was excited. I was, "It's getting bigger," she said. "You'll be a man soon. Show me how you touch yourself. Look how it grows. This is better than television. What do you think about when you touch it?"
Did I say anything? I don't believe I did.
"Titties?" She opened her robe. "You sucked on them when you were a baby. Do you remember?"
Wanting to look away. Wanting to stop touching myself.
"I'll tell you a secret. Touching your dick is nice, but it's nicer when someone else touches it for you. See? You can touch my titties while I do this for you. Doesn't that feel good? Doesn't it?"
I shot all over her hand. Thought she'd be angry. She put her hand to her face, licked it clean. Smiled at me.
"I don't know," she said.
Claudia, my blonde. I'd wondered without much caring just how natural that blondness might be. Still an open question because the hair on her head was the only hair she had. Had to wonder what my mother would have made of that. Shaving her legs was her concession to femininity, and one she accepted grudgingly. Got so she'd have me do it. Come out of the bath, all warm from the tub, and I'd spread the lather and wield the safety razor. I'd be growing whiskers in a couple of years, she told me. Might as well get in some practice for a lifetime of shaving. I asked Claudia what she didn't know.
"I just wanted an adventure," she said.
"Shut the world out. Keep it on the other side of that door."
"But you've got a power," she said. "The same thing that drew me to you pulled me right across the room to where you were standing. It scares me."
"Why is that?" She closed her eyes, chose her words carefully.
"What happens here stays here. Isn't that how it works?"
"Like Las Vegas?" She opened her eyes, looked into mine.
"I've done this sort of thing before," she said.
I'm shocked.
"Not as often as you might think, but now and then. when the moon's full,
and left it behind me when I drove away, like a massage, like a spa treatment.
Then home to hubby.
How was it hurting him? He never knew, and I was a better wife to him for having an outlet.
Taking her time getting to it. It was like watching a baseball pitcher going through an elaborate wind-up. Kind of interesting when you already knew what kind of curveball to expect. But this feels like more than that, doesn't it? She gave me a long look, like she wanted to say yes, but was reluctant to speak the words. Oh, she was good. You've thought of leaving him?
Of course. But I have... Oh, how to say this? He gives me a very comfortable life.
That generally means money.
His parents were wealthy, she said. And he was an only child, and they're gone, and it's all come to him.
I guess the Ford's a rental.
The Ford? Oh, the car I'm driving. Yes, I picked it up at the airport. Why would you... Oh, because I probably have a nicer car than that. Is that what you meant?
Something like that.
Well, we have several cars. There's a Lexus that I usually drive, and he bought me a vintage sports car as a present, an Aston Martin.
Very nice.
I suppose. I enjoyed driving it at first, the power, the responsiveness. Now I rarely take it out of the garage. It's an expensive toy, as am I.
His toy. Does he take you out and play with you much? She didn't say anything. I put my hand where she didn't have any hair, not stroking her, just resting it there, staking a claim. I said, if you divorced him...
I signed one of those things.
A prenup.
Yes.
He'd probably get to keep the toys.
Maybe.
But the lush life would be over. A nod. I suppose he's a lot older than you.
Just a few years. He seems older. He's one of those men who act older than their years, but he's not that old.
How's his health?
It's good. He doesn't exercise. He's substantially overweight, but he gets excellent reports at his annual physical.
Still, anybody can stroke out or have a heart attack. Or a drunk driver runs a red light, hits him broadside.
I don't even like to talk about something like that.
Because it's almost like wishing for it.
Yes.
Still, I said, it'd be convenient, wouldn't it? It wasn't like that with my mother. A stroke, a heart attack, a drunk driver, there one day and gone the next. Not like that at all. 2-3 years after she showed me how much nicer it was to have someone else touch me. 2-3 years when I went to school in the morning and came straight home in the afternoon and closed the door on the whole world. She showed me all the things she knew, plus things she'd heard or read about but never done. And told me how to be with girls.
Like it's a sport and I'm your coach,
she said. What to say, how to act, and how to get them to do things, or let me do things. Then I'd come home and tell her about it, in bed, acting it out, fooling around. 2-3 years. And she started losing weight and lost color in her face, and I must have noticed, but it was day by day, and I was never conscious of it. And then I came home one day, and she wasn't there, but there was a note. She'd be home soon. And an hour later, she came in, and I saw something in her face, and I knew. But I didn't know what until she told me. Ovarian cancer, and it had spread all through her, and they couldn't do anything. Nothing that would work. Because of where it started, she wondered if it was punishment for what we did.
Except that's crap, and I know it's crap. I was brought up believing in God, but I grew out of it, and I never raised you that way. And even if there was a God, he wouldn't work it that way. And what's wrong with what we did? Did it hurt anybody?
And a little later,
all they can give me is chemo, and all it'll do is hurt like fury and make my hair fall out, and maybe stretch my life a few months longer. My sweet baby boy. I don't want you remembering a jauntist old lady dying by inches and going crazy with the pain. I don't want to hang around that long. And you have to help me get out.
School. I didn't play sports. I didn't join clubs. I didn't have friends. But I knew who sold drugs. Everybody knew that much. Anything you wanted. And what I wanted was Downs, and that was easy. She wanted to take them when I left for school, so that I'd be gone when it happened, but I talked her out of that. She took them at night, and I lay beside her and held her hand while sleep took her. And I stayed there so I could tell when her breathing stopped, but I couldn't stay awake. I fell asleep myself, and when I woke up around dawn, she was gone. I straightened the house, went into my room and made the bed look as though it had been slept in. Went to school and kept myself from thinking about anything. Went home, and turning the key in the lock, I had this flash, expecting her to be walking around when I opened the door. Yeah, right. I found her where I'd left her, and I called the doctor and said I'd left in the morning without wanting to disturb her. He could tell it was pills. I could tell he could tell. But he wanted to spare me. Said it was her heart giving out suddenly. Said it happened a lot in cases like hers. If she was alive, if she'd never gotten sick, I'd still be living there. With the two of us in that house, and the whole rest of the world locked out of it. She said, I can't pretend I never thought about it, but I never wished for it. He's not a bad man. He's been good to me.
Takes good care of you.
He cleans his golf clubs after he plays around. Has this piece of flannel he uses to wipe the faces of the irons. Takes the cars in for their scheduled maintenance. And yes, he takes good care of me.
Maybe that's all you want.
I was willing to settle for it, she said.
And now you're not.
I don't know, she said and put her hand on me.
For just a moment it was another hand, a firm but gentle hand, and I was a boy again. Just for an instant, and then that passed. And she went on holding me, and she didn't say anything, but I could hear her voice in my head as clearly as if she'd spoken. Willing to settle, not anymore, my darling, because I've met you, and my world has changed forever. If only something could happen to him, and we could be together forever. If only you want me to kill him, I said.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that where you were headed? She didn't answer, breathed deeply in and out. Then she said,
Have you ever...
Government puts you in a uniform, gives you a rifle, sends you halfway around the world, and winds up doing a whole lot of things you might never do otherwise. All of which was true, I suppose, but it had nothing much to do with me. I was never in the service. Went to sign up once. You drift around, different things start looking good to you. Army shrink asked me a batch of questions, heard something he didn't like in my answers, and they thanked me for my time and sent me on my way. Have to say, that man was good at his job. I wouldn't have liked it there, and they wouldn't have liked me much either. She found something else to talk about, some rambling story about some neighbor of hers. I lay there and watched her lips move without taking in what she was saying. Why bother? What she wasn't saying was more to the point. Pleased with herself, I had to figure, because she managed to get where she wanted to go without saying the words herself. Played it so neatly that I brought it up for her. Like, I'm two steps ahead of you, Missy. Knew where you were going. Saw what a roundabout route you had mapped out for yourself. Figured I'd save us some time. Better now, looking without listening. And it was like I couldn't hear her if I wanted to. All I could hear was her voice speaking in my head, telling me what I knew she was thinking. How we could be together for the rest of our lives. How I was all she wanted and all she needed. How we'd have a life of luxury and glamour and travel. Her voice in my head, drawing pictures of her idea of my idea of paradise. Voices. She moved, lay on her side. Stopped talking, and I stopped hearing that other voice, and she ran a hand the length of my body, and kissed my face and my neck, and worked her way south. Yeah, right. To give me a hint of the crazy pleasures on offer once her husband was dead and buried. Because every man loves that, right? Thing is, I don't. Not since another woman took the pills I'd bought her and didn't wake up. One time I had this date with a girl in my class, and she's coaching me. You can get her to suck it, she'll still be a virgin. She can't get pregnant from it, and she'll be making you happy. Plus, deep down, she's plain dying to do it. But what you want to do is help her out. Tell her when she's doing something wrong, like you'll be her coach, you know? Then she was gone. And since then, I don't like having anybody do that to me. That army shrink. I guess he knew his business. Still, she got it hard. It plays by its own rules, doesn't it? The blood flows there, or it doesn't. You can't make it happen or keep it from happening. Didn't mean I enjoyed it. Didn't mean I wanted her to keep it up. More she did it, less I liked it. Took hold of her head, moved her away. Is something wrong? My turn, I said, and spread her out on the bed and tucked a pillow under her ass and stuck a finger in to make sure she was wet. Stuck the finger in her mouth, gave her a taste of herself. Got on her, rode her long and hard, long and hard. She had one of those rolling orgasms that won't quit, on and on and on, the gift that keeps on giving. I don't know where my mind was while this was going on. Off somewhere, tuned in to something else. Watching HBO while she was getting fucked on Showtime. When she was done, I just stayed where I was, on her and in her. Looked down at her face, jaw slack, eyes shut, and saw what I hadn't seen earlier. That she looked like a pig. Just had a real piggish quality to her features. Never saw it before. Funny. Her eyes opened, and her mouth started running, telling me it had never been like this before. Did you? Not yet. My God, you're still hard. Is there anything? Not just yet, I said. Something I'd like to know first. When you walked into the bar a lifetime ago, she said, and relaxed into what she thought was going to be a stroll down memory lane. How we met, how we fell in love without a word being spoken. I said, what I wondered, how did you know? How do you know I was the one man in there who'd be willing to kill your husband for you? Eyes wide, speechless. What did you see? What did you think you saw? And my hips started working, slowly, short strokes. Had it all worked out in your mind, I said. I moved my elbows so they were on her shoulders, pinning her to the bed, and my hands found her neck, circled it. So you'd be out of town, maybe pick up some other lucky guy to make sure you'd have an alibi. Get off good with him. Because all the while you're thinking about how I'm doing it, killing your husband, wondering exactly how I'm doing it. Am I using a gun, a knife, a club? And you think of me doing him with my bare hands, and that's what really gets you off, isn't it? Isn't it? She was saying something, but I couldn't hear it. Couldn't have heard a thunderclap. Couldn't have heard the world ending, filling my head with happily ever after. But once he's gone, you don't need me anymore, do you? Maybe you'd find another sucker, get him to take me off the board. Thrusting harder now, and my hands tightening on her throat, the terror in her eyes. Jesus, you could taste it. Then the light went out of her eyes, and just like that, she was gone. 3-4 more strokes, and I got where I was going. What's funny is I didn't really feel it. The machinery worked, and I emptied myself into her, but you couldn't call it sensational, because, see, there wasn't a whole lot of sensation involved. There was a release, and that felt good, the way a piss does when you've been walking around with a full bladder. Fact is, it's like that more often than not. I'd say the army shrink could explain it, but let's not make him into a genius. All he knew was the army was better off without me. Most anybody's better off without me. Claudia, for sure. Lying there now with her throat crushed and her eyes glassy. Minute I laid eyes on her, I knew she had the whole script worked out in her mind. How'd she know? How'd she pick me? And if I knew all that, if I could read her script and figure out a different ending than the one she had in mind, why'd I buy her a drink? All said and done, how much real choice did I have in the matter once she'd gone and laid her hand on my arm? Time to leave this town now, but who was I kidding? I'd find the same thing in the next town, or the town after that. Another roadhouse where I might have to fight a guy or might not, but either way I'd walk out with a woman. She might not look as fine as this one, and she might have more hair besides what she had on her head, but she'd have the same plans for me. And if I stayed out of the bars, if I went to some church socials or parents without partners or some such, might work, but I wouldn't count on it. My luck, I'd wind up in the same damn place. Like I said, I really know how to pick 'em.